Right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to yourself, Ms. Luden. I mean, we have had several engagements with yourself over a period of time, and the commissioner at one point was also there, if I'm not mistaken, the commissioner of the Gambling Commission, wasn't that the same thing, before becoming commissioner of SIPCO. We also had with you, I don't have everyone here. I see Ms. Rapolla isn't here, the deputy, but the chief financial officer of ETI, Mr. Cameron Naidu, and Ms. Mami Lahari, the office of the commissioner, Mr. Lahuno, Tehran Chitodzi, I hope that's right, divisional manager, SIPCO, or SIPC, I see that's what they're saying. And who is Mr. S. Sokota? Now tell me, who has a problem in identifying men and women? This happens at every meeting. Who does this? Who's written this? Yeah, I would suggest you take a good hard look at all of us. I don't think we're looking like men. And this happens every meeting now. So it's got to change. Otherwise it's going to be regarded as an insult. Right, so we have that over. And thank you to Mr. Niraj Naidu, who is always is with us, and I do want to thank the staff here. They've been doing a lot of work, especially yourself, Ms. Madalani, with your head down. Thank you very much for the research, and we'll address some of the challenges that you pointed out yourself, which is always useful when the writer identifies some of the issues. Thank you. So, the reason I'm on the plate, please, we've got as many people as we do. It's because they're also going to have a brief look at the training issues. The training program is here, and we won't do that right now. Let us first do the apologies, but we'll consider the training draft program under the minutes. Please add that in. So immediately after tea, we shall consider the draft training program and the program itself, and then the minutes. So can we have someone to please propose adoption of the agenda with that amendment? Thank you, Honourable Imtali. We have somebody else to second that. Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Right. And on that note, we're going to go immediately then on to sub C, and that is the Commissioner, the Annual Report. Just before you address your report, we have members, you know, got the researchers' analysis, what was simply a typo there, I think, probably looking at a number of other issues at the same time, am I correct? That was page 3. Perhaps you'd like to address that Auditor General's report. The research is just pointing out that this was my attention, and that she will address it. But I just point that out. It will be addressed in your report as well when it comes, which we hope to get back to you. So, Commissioner, if you can address us on the matter of your annual report, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, Honourable Members. We are presenting both the annual report as well as the first quarter report, and we have circulated to you quite a lengthy presentation. It has 40 slides in it. We would not like to take you through all those, and in fact, I think when we were here a few weeks ago with the DTI and the DDG for CCIB, Ms. Godwin Tui. She presented an overview of CIBC. A lot of the information she presented in that at that session was information derived from our annual report. So we don't want to repeat ourselves. What I will just do is highlight some of the key achievements during the period, during the year, give you some update about the first quarter performance, and just very briefly highlight some of the things that have happened after the first quarter, which may be very relevant to you, and then go into some questions. As we say, every time we come to the committee, we always highlight that as an organization, we are still and have been since 2011 undergoing sustained and rapid transformation. The aim of this transformation is to improve service delivery. That really is the objective of improving, modernizing the organization and the services we provide. It's about providing a better service to economic citizens. We always also highlight that as an organization, during this transformation process, we've never had luxury of saying, well, we want to really just upgrade our systems now, and so we're just going to take a year out and upgrade everything. We've had to continue providing services to the public on one hand. On the other hand, we've had to modernize in parallel. So it has been, as we always say, building an aeroplane while we're flying it. The key achievements for the previous financial year were really threefold. We effectively have been implementing a new service delivery model. So we spent 2 years designing a service delivery model, consulting on it internally, engaging stakeholders externally, and last year, the previous financial year, the emphasis was on beginning the implementation of that new model. In July last year, we implemented our new structure, progressively and effectively. It came into effect on 1st of September last year. This was a process that was a lengthy process that had a lot of engagement in it. We engaged with both the trade unions in our organization. We jointly developed a structure. We reviewed the job descriptions and the job grading, and it culminated in a matching and placing process. So in July last year, we implemented this new structure, as well as a new remuneration framework. We also implemented some of the new channels, service delivery channels. One of them that we talked about last year already was the integrated company registration and bank account opening process with the FNB. And of course, as we highlighted, we also engaged with the other banks on it. And I'm very pleased to be able to say that Standard Bank will be coming on stream the weekend. So there will be two banks now. We also developed self-service terminals, and we opened our first office in Pretoria in January this year. And then one of the issues that has been plaguing the organization has been our ICT, the stability of our infrastructure and our applications. We spent quite a long time over the last 3 years stabilizing the ICT, but I think we really started seeing the results last year. We also, you may recall last year, we had a lot of problems with our annual return system. We brought it down in July, we shut it down for a month, and our ICT team redesigned it. We launched it again in the first week of August, and the uptick of it was phenomenal. It's been a huge improvement in service delivery. As an organization, we face ever-increasing volumes, and that is why our e-services strategy is so important. In an environment where you're going to see continuously increasing volume of transactions, the only way to deal with is either to generate efficiencies through technology or to increase the number of staff. So that's why our e-migration and our e-services strategy is so important. As you will see from the slide, the volumes of companies registered has increased year on year over the last 3 years. It's not quite at the level that we had in 2008-2009 of closed corporation registration, but that is also economically related. Similarly, in the intellectual property area, we've seen increasing volumes of applications, and again here last year we introduced e-filing in the intellectual property area, and that's also generated a lot of efficiencies in the organization. The slide is quite difficult to see on the screen, but essentially what it shows is it may be better to look at the slide in your handout. What it demonstrates is the increasing uptake of electronic transactions over the period from 2011, and also concurrently the efficiencies that are visible, that are tangibly result from that. In the previous presentation, there was quite a lot of discussion about the business rescue figures, so I'm not sure that there's much really to highlight to you here, and I think maybe we should focus on questions in that regard. The area that's often one of the new functions that the CIPC had, which is what distinguishes it from its predecessor, Cipro, is its investigation and enforcement function. And this year, in the previous financial year, we have started to be much more proactive in this area. I think you will recall, the first thing is that we issued quite a few compliance notices to companies. We had only in the previous 2 years, I think, issued one or two compliance notices. So last year we looked at a whole set of similar cases, and we issued 156 compliance notices to companies. Most of the areas of non-compliance that we found related to the failure to maintain accounting records, and so these are complaints that we receive are from shareholders in that regard. AGMs and financial statements. We also had a bigger investigation into auditor conduct, and our investigation contributed to the finding substantial fines that was imposed by OVA on a particular auditor. And we also focus, one of our areas of focus is also being governance in state-owned entities. You will remember the compliance notice we issued to Telkom. I mentioned the self-service centre, and I know some of the members have visited it already, the one in Pretoria. We would encourage all the members to visit, and we would be very happy to host you, host the committee, and show you how this, in fact, works. As you see from the slide, we have terminals that have been wall-mounted. These are touchscreen terminals, and we have staff in the office that takes people through the transaction. Those people that don't feel comfortable with technology, which we fully accept that there are people who don't feel comfortable with technology, we guide them through that process. In the self-service center in Pretoria, the statistics for August were, I think we were receiving about 2,000 applications for company registration just in that small office in the month of August. So the uptake is quite big, and this is of course a strategy for our small business strategy. This is aimed at businesses with up to 3 directors who want to transact directly. These are the services we provide at the terminals. We provide company registration, annual returns, address changes, financial year-end changes. You can apply for a disclosure certificate, which is emailed to you, and we will be providing director changes in the near future, also at the terminal. That will probably be the most secure way of effecting a director change, because we verify people biometrically. And that's probably the biggest innovation for these terminals. I must say very proudly that we're also the only company register in the world that has integrated biometric verification at this stage. So our process at the SST is probably one of the most secure, and this is, like the FNB process, a world first, so we proudly announce that. this slide demonstrates at a very high level what the process is to register a company at a self-service terminal. The first thing we do is we verify your identity against the Department of Home Affairs. So we verify your two fingerprints, and usually the verification comes back with a picture of the individual. So all three directors, if there were three directors, would go to the terminal and would verify their identity. Then you register the customer, where you generate a password, and that is really your security as an individual. Then you go to register your company, and it's a simple process that guides you through it. You can register at this stage only a private company with a standard memorandum of incorporation, but that is in excess of 70% of the companies that we register as an institution. You can apply for your name reservation in this process at the same time. If your name application does not come back successfully, we can still register the company. It just is registered with a name then, and with a number, and you can then apply for a name change subsequently. We email the certificate to you once the process is concluded. So once you finish at the terminal, you see the screen, which is demonstrated up there, which says, which is also SMS to you. It tells you what you need to pay and where you need to pay. If you choose to go to to AFSA and to deposit cash, we have an arrangement with AFSA that we recognize the payment within 15 minutes. So that would be the quickest way to do this. You can, of course, do an EFT transaction, but we can only release the company registration once we've recognized the payment. We have three goals. And we have translated those goals into programs. So I just wanted to report at a very high level on the three programs to you. These were the targets that were in the APP. And it may be, again, better to look at the slides in front of you, because I think the prediction is quite busy. You will notice that some of the areas where we didn't meet our targets, one of them was annual returns, the filing of annual returns. Our target was for the year was 75%. We believe that our baseline was 70% for the previous year, and what we actually achieved in terms of the way we measured it was 52%. So what we found in this practice of measuring the compliance rate, two things. The one is that we need to be very clear about how we measure it, because it comes down to a lot of detail. Do you give companies have 30 days within which to pay after the annual return becomes due? So you need to be very clear about how you set your indicator. I think the other question this raised for us is, should this be a compliance issue, and what kind of a target should we be having? Because if a company chooses not to file an annual return, that is a way in which they signal to us that they're not operating, that they're not transacting, and that, in fact, so they're dormant. So it may not be a compliance issue. It may really be an indicator of dormancy. Then the second indicator that we didn't meet our target was in the investigations area. Essentially what happened is because we had the strategy of issuing compliance notices, we ring-fenced a whole lot of investigations, 300 investigations, and because of that, we didn't meet our time frame on some of those cases. So in terms of the second program, which is innovation and creativity, you'll see that the area where we didn't meet our targets was in the copyright area, which is very disappointing because we don't receive a lot of applications in this area. The explanation for that is that we introduced e-filing, and there was an initial problem with the recognition of the application. So it was more of an ICT problem. We couldn't see, and because the turnaround time is the service delivery standard is 2 days, if you don't see the application for a day or so, then you won't be able to process it and recognize it. So we've reviewed both the ICT process, and we've also looked at standard. In terms of our third program, which is service delivery and access, the one indicator that stands out is one that I've discussed in the committee quite a lot, which is our call answer rate, which the achievement, overall achievement for the year was 31%. We had set a target low at 50%, and unfortunately we were not able to meet that target. And I'll talk about that a bit more in the course of the presentation. On the financials, I didn't really want to burden you with a lot of information. It is obviously all in the annual report. Maybe just at a high level, the income that we received, primarily from annual returns, exceeded what we had anticipated, primarily actually as a result of penalties. We reintroduced penalties on annual returns for late filing of annual returns in October last year, when the system was up and running again. And a lot of the unanticipated revenue that we received came from that. So it has raised questions about, it's just very difficult to budget for penalties. It's not really something that we should be budgeting for. And we have also got a surplus, had another surplus, in part from revenue, unanticipated revenue. I think it was about 61 million, and in part from not spending quite as much, largely on staff. So that accounts for the surplus. We're not retaining the surplus, we're returning it to the fiscus. So that really is a high-level overview of the annual report. There's, of course, a lot more information in there. We thought that we would go straight into the quarter one performance because it does lead onto it naturally. In the first quarter, the organization, the RPC, went through a lot of change. We renovated the building, the processing side, the back office, and we introduced a paperless environment in the company's area. I'll show you a slide on that. That did impact in some areas on our ability to process because it really felt like building an airplane while you're flying it. We renovated each floor and then moved staff into it. So it was quite a taxing process, but very rewarding. The results have been very rewarding. We also took the opportunity, as I think I've mentioned before to you, to strengthen our ICT infrastructure substantially. So we recabled our building. We introduced better computers with higher processing capability during this whole change process. And we think that we will definitely see the results of that in the course of this year. So for the quarter, in this year's annual performance plan, we've increased the number of targets that we set for ourselves. Last year, I think we had 12, and this year we have 23. Overall, we have achieved 18 of those targets, and the performance overall is 77%. The areas where we've not met the target in this quarter, the first area was in the manual company registration. You'll see that our target there was to process 85% of the applications within 25 working days, and we managed to met 83% of the target. In terms of cooperatives, we only achieved 84% as opposed to the 90% that we had hoped that we set for ourselves. There was a backlog in the cooperative area as a result of some of the change that we implemented in the organization, moving staff around, but they are back on stream now. In the other areas relating to this program, relating on the enforcement side, during this quarter we've met the targets. In the intellectual property areas, you can see we've also met the targets for the quarter, exceeded them in instances. in the last area, in the service delivery area, we haven't met all the targets, and let me talk to the ones that we haven't met. We rolled out online registration for intellectual property last year, and we saw a big uptake in the trademarks area as well as in the copyright area. But it's been slower in the area of patents and designs. And in designs in particular, there are three major law firms that process these applications. Two of them have not yet implemented the changes on their side, and therefore they're still submitting manually, and that's what affected the figures for online design applications. The call answer rate declined again during quarter. This was in part due to us moving stuff around, dealing with telephone connectivity. It's got our own telephone system. We do work with we use the DTI system, so there are a number of steps that we have to go through to ensure connectivity, and that definitely impacted on it. It is, of course, not the only matter impacting on it. But I will talk to that in a little while. And then our target for the year is to roll out 45 self-service centers, terminals. And for the first quarter, we wanted to roll out 13. We did, in fact, roll out 13 terminals, but only 12 of them were operational. So that just indicates that our team that audits these indicators, they decided that it was not good enough to say that 13 are rolled out because only 12 of them were actually operational. The one that was not operational was one that we had placed at the NYEA in Maponyamol in Soweto, and there was a connectivity issue. At the NYEA in Maponyamol in Soweto. And then in terms of the other indicators, we have met the targets that we had set. I've already talked to these issues and what the remedial steps are in regard of the targets not met. We also, tracking, we always talk about the percentage of electronic transactions, and we note that in the first quarter, in terms of company registration, we have further increased the percentage of online transactions to 89%. In other areas, you can also see the changes from the previous financial year to the first quarter. Going to talk to this business rescue. They may be welcome to raise questions. Let's go down. There are quite a few slides on the financial performance, and we're very happy to answer questions. I'd just like to take you through these the pie charts that we've attached, because it illustrates the makeup of the revenue and the expenditure quite well. As you can see, most of the revenue of the organization is derived from annual return filing. And the annual the revenue derived from the annual return filing of companies is certainly, historically, it's been much more focused on closed corporations, but that's definitely shifting, which indicates that there are more companies increasingly that are being registered and that are operating and transacting. I mentioned as well that we haven't been budgeting for annual return penalties, and you can see what impact annual return penalties have on the overall annual return income. It constitutes 27% of that. And overall annual return revenue constitutes 67% of the income that we have as an organization. In terms of expenditure, most of our expenditure is on employees. We are a service delivery organization, and we've had actually fairly small capital expenditure. There will be a lot more capital expenditure coming through this year as we upgrade our ICT infrastructure. The ICT expenditure is roughly 30% of our expenditure. on in terms of goods and services and capital, which is, you know, supportive. It's in line with the strategy of the organization. I'm not going to go through the rest of the financials. As I said, I'm very happy. We're very happy to engage on any questions in that regard. The focus for the rest of the year is to increase the rollout of self-service terminals. Our focus also was on redesigning the website, and we launched the website earlier this week. I'll briefly take you through it. In addition, we... We're also increasing the number of channels. I mentioned already that Standard Bank will be coming on stream this weekend. And compliance and enforcement is a focus of ours as an organization. We are, one of the big changes, as I mentioned earlier, that we are a regulatory institution. It's a big change between Cipro and CIPC, and we are engaged in proactive investigations in this area. The slide is quite dark, but it demonstrates what our back office looks like now. Staff have two screens. On one of the screens they review the electronic documents, and on the other screen they process. Our query resolution, this is one of the biggest issues for us in an organization. The call taking and answering of calls is only a part of query resolution. What we find is that the reason why people call is because they want information, but also because they want resolution around transactions. Now, resolution around transactions is something that you can really only get from the back office. And that's why we implemented the telephone system that requires the back office to answer calls. What we found, however, is that our staff is overburdened. They are capturing transactions, they are processing emails, and they are answering calls. And so we have conducted a time and motion study internally to understand, firstly, what are the efficiencies that have been generated by the paperless environment that we now have, and secondly, how much time does that give staff to deal with queries. So we have found that these changes that we introduced in the back office have actually had quite substantial efficiency gains. Staff no longer need to print out documents, they don't need to open files. We store all the documents electronically. So that has actually taken out quite a lot of the work for staff, the administrative work. And that has freed up resources to deal with queries. But there is quite a big change that we need to undergo, and we need to so we've also introduced, with the new website, a new query resolution process that I will highlight you now. So this is the new website that we launched on Wednesday. It came on stream on Tuesday afternoon, late in the afternoon, and it's been, what we found is that the uptake on it was phenomenal. The intention behind the website was to make it a lot easier for people to navigate, to give them a lot more information. I would encourage you to visit the website. We actually guide you through a step-by-step process, and we allow you to upload documents, scan and email, and then attach them to the actual website. We've also introduced a new e-services, and there is a process of refining these that we are engaged in on a daily basis. And I think one of the things, certainly every time you introduce a big change, it's not a big change just internally, also externally. So we've had a lot of inquiries from intermediaries who are navigating their way through this new system. A big change has been the introduction of a new system for director changes and for member changes, because that was one of the areas we had a lot of complaints about in the past. We've also introduced a fully automated process for address changes, business address changes. So in the past, this has been a manual process. You would have to submit by email the manual documents to us, and we would process it in the back office. This has now been fully automated, so there's no back office process. The same for financial year-end changes. So those are relatively small changes for businesses, but if they are unexpected, it can be very frustrating. So it's part of making it easier. If you just go back to the previous slide, Tyrone, you'll see there's an icon at the bottom of the website that says Inquiries. So what we have introduced is a query logging system. If one clicks on that, you will go into the inquiry system. You'll be able to access it with your current customer code, and you'll be given a reference number. In the back office, what happens is those queries get routed to people. There are people that actually assign the queries, and if the queries are not responded to within the SLA period, the SLA standard that we set and has been programmed into the system, it's automatically escalated to different levels of managers. So the service delivery standards that we have made available in the past and are still on the website have now been integrated into a workflow. You may have read in the media that there were a few hiccups on the website on the first day, but those hiccups have been sorted out. One of them related to a problem with the telecom line, and the other was just the load balancing that we had on our infrastructure. But that was resolved yesterday afternoon. Another new service that we introduced and that we've launched as of Wednesday is a dedicated service for listed companies and their subsidiaries. We provide a dedicated service just for them in terms of transactions that are critical for them and that they require to be able to process quickly. And we will be opening a dedicated office at the JSE for these transactions. We're just working through all the infrastructure issues for that. And then in conclusion, I'd like to conclude by saying with the changes that we've implemented last year and that we've also progressively implemented this year, we believe that we've put in place a model for a new public service delivery, in particular with the self-service centres that will be rolling out throughout the country. We've also benchmarked ourselves against registers, and intellectual property offices in other countries, and we believe in some areas, such as the FNB and our self-service terminals, we are in fact setting the standard. But we recognize that there's a lot of change that needs to happen in our organization. It is change that needs to happen progressively. It's about ensuring that we bring along our staff and that efficiencies and the possibilities we've generated, those efficiencies are actually realized and translate into tangible results for economic citizens. Thank you.
No, thank you very much indeed, Commissioner. We really appreciate that. I don't know if any other member of your staff, if you had scheduled any one of them to add to what you have just said. Yes.
No, I think they will assist with questions.
That's right. That's a very good strategy. Give the presentation, let the star take the questions. I must remember that one myself. Yes. All right. What we just have to do, I've just been reminded, I was waiting just to pick on the apologies we may have got, looking at Eva, it would appear we don't have any other official apologies. Right, we do. I've just been informed now by Mr. Hermans of two others. Ms. Honourable Montash is attending a Labour meeting, Portfolio Committee. As we know, the Honourable Sawford is on extended medical leave. The Honourable M. Corby is on medical leave today. And then we have the Honourable Chivambu, who has extended an apology, but he has asked his colleague and comrade, Honourable Matthias, to attend. And of course, I'll see you there. Thank you.
No, stop. I see you.
And Malodzi, Honorable Malodzi.
Yes, President.
Okay, thank you very much. I apologize for that. Thank you. Right. So we have acknowledged everyone then. Thank you very much. Now, over to the members. Now, just, you know, thank you for being so frank with us about the challenges that you are facing and what hasn't been done. But let us just turn to the membership first. Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Liyenge, Honourable Kuom North, yes, Honourable Malodzi, who's behind you that I just can't see? Sorry, Honourable Mpah. You see, I'm not sure why you feel we're running a church here, all of you. Why you can't come closer? I'm not going to hand out a plate for money. I assure you. Right. I mean, it's... I know, this is it. You've got your cards, haven't you? Give me a card here. I've got a machine. But anyway, right. In that order then, please. Thank you. Honourable Hilda.
Thank you. Firstly, let me say, my colleague, Dean Matheson, and I did visit your self-service terminal in Pretoria, and I can see it's making a huge impact in improving service delivery times. But I wanted to talk through a couple of things from your annual reports. Firstly, if you look at the... I've noticed that quite a few of your targets were reduced from the baseline 2013 targets. That's kind of allowed you to overachieve on some of those targets. So what we'd like to be seeing is the targets actually going up, not being reduced from baseline. What we'd also like to see is the service delivery standard actually going, getting better and better. And so, you know, taking five working days to allocate an application number seems to be too long. And then the 25 working days to register the company manually, that's more than a month in terms of calendar days. That's still far too long. So while you've achieved 92% of that service standard, the service standard is in fact still too long. What we'd like to see is that service standard coming down slowly but surely over the years. That's the first issue. The second issue is, again, the call center. I was alarmed by the note in your annual report on page 27 that, some staff were discouraged to take calls by one of the representative trade unions in the call center. I mean, I think all of us will be alarmed by that. That's completely unacceptable. And I wonder if you can just give us more detail about what happened there, what trade union was that's actually encouraging people to not take calls, because that's very damaging for entrepreneurs that are trying to get through to the CIPC, and what the result of that was. And then lastly, I just want to refer to the World Bank Doing Business Report. Now, the new one I know is coming out in just a couple of weeks. The 2014 one is coming out in October. So this is slightly outdated, but the last one we went from ranked number 56 to number 64, so we dropped 8 places in the category of starting a business. And that concerns me as well. And I think part of it is related to the fact that these service standards are still too long. And so I just wanted to get your perspective on that. This is an important report which business people take seriously. And I think it is something that we should also measure ourselves by, and whether you can give us some insight into whether you think that's going to be improved with the report that's coming out in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks a lot.
Say to you, Honourable Hill Lewis, you're very welcome, and I hope you've learned a few things from your extended study leave. Thank you. I understand it will be quite valuable. Honourable Liyenge?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. The presentation is actually welcomed. It's clear and very precise. My question, Chair, is with regard to the sales targets and achievements. I don't know whether one perceives these targets as a bit low when you look at the achievements. Within 25 working days, companies that are registered, they constitute 85%, much as those that are registered within 3 days electronically. So when you check that against the service standards and the impact, therefore, as the achievements are quite huge when it is 85%, we are already there, you are first class. But when we check the impact, therefore, it doesn't really make much impact. Then the other issue is the local registered intellectual property versus those that are from the international community. Because in the earlier presentation by the DG and CLPC spoke to external, but internal, I mean external companies registered in the country. So can we therefore get an understanding as to which are those, even if that is information that is provided to us, so that in future we know as to how much ground have we covered in terms of ensuring that the local content is registered and there is improvement. One really appreciates the aspirations of the institution of maybe ensuring that the service standards are actually achieved. But we also want to join at the level of our institution being Parliament and locate ourselves to how best can we assist you in terms of reaching out to the poor communities, because the local content, the indigenous knowledge and the appropriate aspects, they need to be registered. Maybe if they are not registered, what is it? Is it the lack of knowledge on the part of the communities to register their innovation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I would like to know is, you know, with your new self-service centres, your new website that's been launched, do you envisage that your services will become cheaper in the long run, or will it in fact be more expensive to maintain? Secondly, you know, I know you cannot budget quite quickly for penalties, but it becomes a trend. And, you know, if it was 27% last year, it might be always 15%. What I want to know, is it not possible to give the penalties back as an incentive? Say, for instance, if you pay your annual return fee within 7 days after it's due, you will get it 15% cheaper. So then there is an incentive back, you know, to the consumer. And then finally, how our fee structure in South Africa, how does it compare with the SADC countries?
Thank you very much, Honourable Kuenko. Honourable Malansi.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question... Thank you, Chairperson. My first question to the presenter, firstly, I would like to appreciate the presentation. It's quite clear, and it shows there's a lot of improvement from CIPROB to this new CIPC. So, my question is about the returns, this so-called annual returns. Want to maybe have any changes in terms of the each and every year annual returns? Maybe it's become maybe more than a year, or maybe 5 years, or 3 years. Is it, how possible is that? Because you find people from the disadvantaged area, they have to push to go to the cities to go and renew the things. And sometimes it becomes very hectic because your office is not yet there to all the areas. We understand that. And I want also to know about the term around of the CK amendments. If somebody wants to amend the CK, how long does it take? And for how many times can that CK be amended, or the company registration can be amended, for how many times? The company registration period, as my previous speakers said also, I think it must be tried to be a short, because you introduced the one for the bank, which is very fast, but manually it's like it's just taking very long. The other issue which is a problem at the CIP in Pretoria, in head office there. What are you going to do with the middlemen? Because you find there is a lot of middlemen there around. And sometimes, you know, it's like they have a connection with the staff members. If you go straight to the office to the assistant, they frustrate you and tell you this, it takes too long, you better go to those guys. And when you go to those guys, and the same staff members make it very quick for you. So I think that is something like there's corruption there, which you must try to look. And do you have any strategy to get that which is happening there? And the issue of cooperative registrations. Do you have sometimes the road shows to go to the rural areas or to the disadvantaged communities in terms of informing them about cooperatives? If you don't have, can you establish such so that people must know about the registration of cooperatives? Thank you, Professor.
I have been covered. I just helped him to use my mic so that he must be here. So, yeah, but the quick questions I wanted to raise have been taken, except to commend the team for the good work they've done in creating new innovations in terms of company registration thing.
No, thank you very much. I mean, next time we're under pressure with questions, we'll have to all be sharing mics and questions we cut down. Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chairperson. As my colleague, the Honourable Hill-Lewis, had said earlier to Ms. Luden, that we had been on an oversight visit to the CRPC, and one of the things that the Honourable Hill-Lewis had written extensively about was our run-ins with runners and the undermining of the institution that they continue to do, and my colleague had raised how they seem to have unprecedented access into the CRPC and also into SARS, which I know is not anything to do with you. But I'd just like to know from Ms. Luden if any progress has been made in that respect since our visit there, and what measures are continuing to take place to stop that issue. Just a comment here, person, if you will, the CRPC's relevance into building our economy can never be underestimated. Entrepreneurship is something that will turn this economy around, and entrepreneurs must have the ability to get their businesses going as quickly as possible. And so the role that this entity plays in this economy is vitally important, and that's why we need to get it right, and that's why turning it around from SIPCO, from where it came from, is so vitally important. And I think that my Honourable colleague Hill-Lewis is correct when he says that we need to have higher targets so that the entity continues to improve so that it can serve its place amongst entrepreneurs. Thank you.
Yes, I think all of us would say that, you know, the decision by DDI to restructure it so dramatically that in fact it detests the pro is one of the finer decisions that it has taken. And certainly it impacts on our financial rating as well to have a solid company's registration and intellectual property system operating. But yes, there are certain issues here, and I take this issue up because the very issue, one of the core issues why Cipro failed, and actually it was like cleaning out the Sigium stables, was related to governance. But when I see an issue here by the Auditor General on governance, I am concerned. Even though you didn't get a qualified audit, as you know, you got an unqualified audit. And I look at the design and implementation which you referred to yourself in this regard, the non-compliance with laws and regulations, Cipco Accounting Authority did not take effective steps. Now, what have you done to overcome that, seen as the Auditor General's opinion, you did not take effective steps to prevent a regulated expenditure as required by Section 51B, Roman Small 2 of the PMMA. It worries me because these are the very issues that lead to the demise of the Pro. The other points have been raised around the call centre, which you referred to yourself, that the target 50% was incredibly low, incredibly low, and yet that was not even achieved. My question is, what persuaded you to set such a low target? Was the problem evident then, so that you set a low target in the hope that you would meet it? The Swedish model, we heard a lot about that Swedish model before, and I'm glad to see that it's beginning to have positive effects now. But the other issue as well is related to something here, just a minute. On the slip code here. Right, I wasn't too sure what you meant about this, you were saying about your website, etc. Now, given that the call centre is not working effectively, because it isn't according to what you've said here now, this fully automated system, it's only just been launched. Am I correct that it's only just been launched? What kind of time frame are you giving it before you do a forensic type of audit, or a performance audit, to be able to say, this is working, or strategic review on it, or what steps do we need to take? Are you going to give it 3 months or a year, or what are we looking at here? And what are you expecting? What is your objective here, and what can we take? Because on that issue, we would like to call you back, per se. The last question is on the ghosts. You know, we had a lot of people throwing themselves in as directors all over the show, and I see now you're cracking that one. Can we have a report as to how effective that has become in eliminating this practice? Thank you.
We are allocating those questions between ourselves. So let me talk about the targets first. We've had actually quite extensive discussions about that in the organization, about whether our targets are too low. I think the main concern certainly for me has been that what we need to be able to do is balance the targets. So we need to be able to In this year, our goal is to stabilize the operations, but to improve the query resolution and the call taking. And we can't do both at the same time. So what we need, that's why we set the targets where they are, to give us some scope to work on improving query resolution. And once we've brought both those things up to an acceptable standard, we can then continue generating the efficiency. So I think we need a little bit more time on this. And we're fully aware of the issues and appreciative of the issues that have been raised around the targets that we set for ourselves. I think it is very much in the context of all the change happening in the organization, all the stabilization, and then trying to improve query resolution. We can certainly improve the, certainly on the registration side, the results, but I think the big issue there will be around name reservations. So there will have to be more innovation and improvement, probably mostly from a technology perspective, to increase those turnaround times. It's very difficult to talk about international rankings because it's relative. The rankings for starting a business, we are just the small component of that overall ranking, starting a business. It includes back registration. It includes other licenses. So it's not necessarily indicative of company registration itself. However, as a country, we need to improve that. And so that's why we are also liaising with other departments. And I did forget to mention that we now have a live link with SARS. It became effective on Friday last week, so which means we instantaneously exchange information with SARS. So we inform them of companies that are registered, and they give us the tax number back. But that is already that, and that should then have an impact on the rankings. The only problem also with the rankings is that they published rankings in 2015, but they did assessments for last year. So there will always be a year's lag in it. And we, as an executive team, about 3 years ago, one of our colleagues was very optimistic and believed that we could be one of the top 15 company registers within a period of 5 years. And at the time, I thought that that was a very, very unlikely scenario. But I think we're getting a lot closer to it. And I think there are a few things we still need to refine. And then I think we will actually be among the top registers. Maybe not 50, but pretty close to that. The call center issue, the role that unions have played in that, it's one particular union, but it is the majority union in our organization. The big issue has been part of a change management issue, and we need to engage with them. Because when we changed the job descriptions, when we redesigned the organization, we specifically built in query resolution into the job descriptions. That made an impact on the job grade. So before, the job descriptions only required staff to capture information. But we've now enriched the job descriptions. And that's part of the strategy to move to an electronic environment, so there will be less capturing and there will probably be more query resolution and assistance provided. So that is a change process that we need to still spend more time on in the organization and engage with the union on it to make sure, and the staff, that everybody understands what the impact is of this. So I think we're in a better position to engage with staff now, because the reality is that if people are overburdened, they will focus on those areas where they think the most value comes from. And so as we now generate efficiencies, we need to engage with staff. It is also largely a management issue internally in the organization. And unfortunately, in a company's area, we, about almost 2 months ago now, lost the senior manager. She moved. She hasn't been lost to government or to us, really, because she's moved to the Compensation Commission. And so there are definitely benefits for us as CIPC in that, because it means we will have a closer relationship with the Compensation Commission, but we need to ensure that we are able to recruit somebody to replace her. So I think I've spoken quite a lot about the targets. The targets, the manual registration, were specifically set in the way they were to encourage people towards electronic transactions. So that is our focus. The reason why for manual transactions in company registration it's 25 working days is because we provide a lot of electronic channels, and it's actually all over the country. I mean, the first company that was registered through FNB, this FNB process, came from a very remote area in the Northern Cape. So we accept technology can actually does make us much more accessible all over the country. What we need to do is make sure that people feel comfortable with it and that we make it as simple as possible. So our strategy is to focus on the electronic transactions and to process those faster. That means we're then able to only process manual transactions at the end of the day almost. So we allocate more resources to electronic transactions. That's why the turnaround times on manual transactions are much higher. The issues about intellectual property, the reason why we report on it is because we believe that should be one of the key indicators for us. The use of our intellectual property system locally, it must be relevant for local people, local businesses and local inventors. There are quite a few changes that need to be implemented to increase the relevance. In the trademark area, we are actually on par with international distribution between local and international registration. And with increasing education, I think a lot of it is really about awareness in that area. But we see increasing numbers of percentages of local uptake in the trademark area. I think the patents and designs is the biggest area of concern, and I think there we need probably to have a legislative change. So without substantive examination, we're probably not going to significantly change those numbers. So we need to make it cheaper for local people to access the international system, and that we can do through by introducing substantive examination. And there is, of course, also an awareness issue. So those are areas that, as an organization, we're spending a lot more focus on now. And we think also that there's actually a big role we can play or a lot of assistance we can get from parliamentarians in terms of outreach. So we certainly welcome working with you in your constituencies, both around company registration, but also in terms of the intellectual property area. Then there was a question about whether or not we envisage that our services will become cheaper as they become more electronic, or whether they're going to become more expensive. What we would like to do is maintain the fees the way they are. Well, not entirely. We have obtained approval from the Treasury to adjust our fees by 5% annually. So what we will be implementing are annual increases, but below inflation increases. Because if we don't ensure that our fees are adjusted annually, we're going to get to a point in 10 years' time where the fees have never been adjusted, and everything else, the cost of everything else has increased, and then we need to make a big change in fees. So we believe that it should be an incremental process. What we want to introduce are a lot more free services. So instead of bringing our fees down, we'd like to now start offering free services, introduce new services and make those free to people. There's a big push, for example, in the UK. The UK Companies House has a big push for making certain things available free of charge, and we're looking at that as well. Our fees are some of the lowest in the world. There was a review done by the Swedish Companies Office of all the offices registered, company registers around the world that are a member of this corporate registers form. So that includes developed and developing countries. The Swedish office, I'm sure we can get that survey. They published it last year. What they found is that offices that are have to be self-sustaining, such as ours, tend to actually charge the lowest fees. So ironically, offices that receive fees, income budget from the fiscus, tend to charge higher fees than offices that are that have to provide a service in a sense are dependent on the income they receive from that. So we don't. We think our fees are very low, even compared in the VADC areas, because, for example, an annual return for a company is 100 rand per annum, and their registration is 125 rand without a name reservation. So I don't think that there's much that we should be releasing our fees for that. I do think that we should be really looking at how do we get value back. And that, I think, is certainly for me one of the things I feel very passionately about, and these are the things we're discussing in the organization. I think we must definitely look at the recommendations around the penalties. We've taken exactly the same view as the Honourable Member mentioned, that even though we can't budget for the penalties, it does need to be reflected in our budget in some way as it becomes predictable. So, and there might be ways in which we can give back. Yeah. So then on the issue of annual returns, I think we need to find different ways. One of the in which we deal with this, one of the innovative options that was mentioned in one of our strategic planning sessions by a staff member was sort of a pay-as-you-go company, which is you only really pay your renewal fee for that company when you need it. So I think we need to look at different kinds of models and understand what the business community needs and what we can offer. So as we improve our services, we are able to look at that and to provide a bit of variation. The only constraint we have is what the legislation requires us to do. So we can't always waive fees, even though in some instances we've wanted to. We don't have the legislative power to do so. On CK2 amendments and company amendments, two big changes that we've introduced are the automated address changes and financial year-end changes. So those are two changes that I think that will make a big difference. A lot of the CK2s we got and we get are for address changes and financial year-end changes. That is now been sorted out, and that has been automated. The only problem, so CK2 address change and financial year-end change can happen immediately. But with a company address change, there's a five-day lag time that's required by law. So it will only be released after 5 days. Director changes and member changes is the area that we've now amended, where we've now released new systems. And this is an area where we've always had problems, different kinds of problems. On the one hand, we need to process these transactions fast. On the other hand, there are issues around security. So the way we dealt with it in the previous system on directors is that we provided you, we would receive the documents and the approval for the change. We would release a password back to the authorized person, and that person would then effect the director changes on the system. We found that there was actually some abuse in that. So a company secretary or a director would be mandated in terms of the meetings to effect certain changes, but when we gave them the password, they would then effect additional changes or different changes, and we couldn't control that. So we changed that now in our system. What we do is we investigate in those instances. When somebody brings that to our attention, we investigate it, and then we will effect a change. But I think Tyrone can talk about those things a bit more. On cooperative registrations, we do roadshows. We do actually get invited a lot to present on it, and we do all over the country. And we think we agree that there needs to be some education around that. We need to automate that system as well, because it's not in the manual process at the moment. It is in the pipeline to be automated. And then also, you know, there's a new legislation. So in a sense, we're waiting for that to come into effect before we do major advertising and awareness raising around that. Just one other thing, a chairperson, that you raised. Two issues. The one about governance. Tyron will answer the questions about runners and some of the other issues. Just on governance, on the irregular expenditure, I have engaged with the Auditor General about that, because it is not as though we don't have systems in place in the organization. In fact, we picked up most of the irregular expenditure ourselves. It's not that the Auditor General found it. We found it, and we have dealt with it. The issue is more what kind of steps, disciplinary steps you put in place. And this financial year, certainly, we're dealing with it very strictly. Okay. And then the target for the call center, why did we set it low? You know, I've spoken to lots of different people inside the organization and outside the organization about why we needed a call center in the first place. And the reality is that Cipro implemented, DTI introduced a call center for Cipro about 10 years ago because Cipro staff members were not answering their phones. And that is the situation we still have. So that is the issue we need to deal with. Because the reality is that people don't want to speak to a call center. They want to speak to a person who can actually give them the right answer. And that is just a culture issue that we need to deal with in the organization. So I am told all the time that we should introduce a new call center, but it is not going to solve the problem. So I think this is just, as I said, fundamentally a culture issue. It is about accountable government answering their phones. So the target was set low because that was a stretch for us. We thought it would be a stretch. And that is very unfortunate, and I'm not proud of saying that at all. That is one of the big things we still need to change in our organization. The query logging system that we introduced to the website, on the first day that it was released, we had 200 queries logged already. So what is good about that is that we have data and we can hold people accountable. And I think in the end, this all comes down to accountability. So that's all I want to say about this. Tyron?
Okay, thanks, Commissioner. Honorable members, I'll deal with two outstanding issues. I think the first one relates to governance pertaining to audit issues that were raised by Audit General. We do acknowledge those issues that were raised by AG. However, we have started with the process to develop a plan, what we normally call it an audit matrix, that reflects specific actions that need to be done, and those actions are allocated to individual managers, and there are specific timelines to implement those actions. There are monitoring mechanisms that we have built into the process. We have internal risk committee structure that also oversee the implementation thereof, and such reports are also presented at the audit committee. The audit committee has put it very strongly that all these things should be implemented by year end. And we are hoping that all the actions plans that we have put on paper are achievable, and then you'll see a better picture in the next financial year. On the agents, runners, we do acknowledge in the organization the challenge of agents and runners, but what we have started looking at is largely awareness. We have put forward a strong emphasis to our security staff to ensure that they try to distance the runners from the office, because as and when you get into the environment, you are faced with a runner, and sometimes they provide a client with wrong information. The second point is awareness around to our staff around ethical issues, what is doable and what is not doable. Supplemented by the fraud prevention plan, which was approved by April this year, which we are implementing. There are progress there. We have also started to implement our whistleblowing mechanism so that the public out there and even our internal staff are able to raise suspicions and allegations that we can then try to investigate. We are building on investigation capacity in the organization so that all these allegations that come forward are attended to. We also note that I think Honorable Hill Lewis sent us a work complaint that we are also attending to, and I think in the next week or two we should be done with the investigation. So those are key critical issues that we are implementing around trying to mitigate the mushrooming of agents or what you call runners. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much. But there's just one thing I still remain concerned of, because you did indicate now that you identified these challenges yourself, the irregularities. I must assume that was done by your internal audit, as it were, and that's very healthy to show that you are meeting regularly. But I'm not sure that I understood you clearly. You think that disciplinary measures have been put in place, are being put in place, or what? Where are we with the disciplinary measures here? And the other aspect is to do with the calls thing, too, you see. I think that it does need to be addressed a lot more rigorously, that one. Because it, in a way, it becomes then related to immediate leadership within that supervision, as it were. And that is also highlighted in the area. Now, I think that it would be relatively easy for you to score green, you know, in terms of this radar screen and the audit report, if you address that particular one. And it doesn't, you know, I just don't believe that it has sufficiently been addressed. But I'm happy to hear that at least you're aware of the issue. I would also hope that the disciplinary measures are not entering its 6 months, and that we're looking at a process that was begun last month and is finished this month. When, you know, how long is it taking? Because I think that is the other challenge of governance, is that disciplinary measures are stretched, and this impacts negatively on the fiscus. But what I am happy to learn, and I'm sure the committee members are happy to learn, is a lesson we can take on board. That the Swedish study showed that, you know, where it comes to companies, sort of organizations such as yourselves, the Cipcos of this world, that when you rely on the fiscus for your funds, the costs of your services are higher. See? Now, let me encourage us to look and review the way we are doing things. If that's the pertinent point, why would this be the case? Why would it be the case? And what I didn't find in the annual report, but I must say it would certainly help, notwithstanding that my eyesight is not as good as one or two other members here, but really this is virtually grey writing. I mean, it's actually designed not to read. You know, I'm not sure why it isn't back. Now, and the other aspect, it couldn't have been in small print if you wanted it. Was there, you were looking at your costs or something. You didn't want to increase this by another page. It really, to me, you know, I had to get somebody else to be my eyes here, other than using a magnifying glass. But I really think that's a great step for me to see that this is the kind of work we're producing with very good information. Very good information. I hope I don't see that again. Right, and it's just, I would like to see the fees. You mentioned 100 Rand for this and so on and so forth. Please think that's a matrix of all your services and the costs. Related to that, just on this matrix, give us the time, your targeted time, etc. I think that's going to help us to also make our constituencies aware, constituents and people of South Africa, how effective these costs are. And if they're not, at least we know what we're talking about. So let's just get that on board then, and the time frames. Yes, there are time frames. Time frames, yes. Now, well, the time frames, I think you mean a deadline for us to receive it. And I'm sure you've got all this information in the computer. It's a matter of putting it onto a document. So I would say give you a break over the weekend, but if we can get this Tuesday, thank you, so that we've got it by our training day of Thursday. Is that all right? Thank you. And I'm glad to say you're available to run around the constituencies, seeing as you haven't got offices everywhere. Thank you. The mic doesn't pick up the head going. You see,
happy to give it to your record. We apologize for the annual report, and we will certainly take those matters into consideration. I must say that cost was an issue for us. We believe that we need to be efficient as an organization to keep our fees low. We fully take that on board, and for the record, we will certainly change the font, both the size and the color of it, in the next year. And we will certainly get you the matrix by Tuesday. Then lastly, on the irregular expenditure, we did actually, what we do is I certainly take action. We send written warnings and we have disciplinary meetings on it. A lot of the irregular expenditure last year, as I said, was actually picked up by our own finance department. And then when it's irregular, there needs to be condemnation. Following that, that's where we take the disciplinary steps. I think it's mostly ICT, almost all of it is ICT related, and that has been a big concern for us. It is, of course, because of all the changes that are happening there as well. It's licenses. So one of the things we've done is we standardized all the licenses on the financial year end, so that all licenses start in April, but it's definitely not acceptable. I don't know, Tyrone, if you want to say anything on this. No.
Is it over? Have you disciplined them now? I mean, where are we in this process?
Well, we discipline every time there's an irregular expenditure. We do the discipline.
They're on board now, they have their final warning.
Well, it depends. You have a written warning. It's for different processes. You will have different disciplinary.
Okay, so we won't see that in the Auditor General's report next year.
Well, I hope the Auditor General's convinced by it. I can't speak for him.
I think you have. I'll check with the members. But I think you've been very forthright and frank. Honourable Hill Lewis?
No, perhaps. Do we have another round of follow-ups? Okay, great. Perhaps another way of stating the question is just to ask how many people have actually been dismissed. How many people are no longer working for the CIPC as a result of irregular expenditure? Then on the annual reports, I mean, as MPs, we receive all the annual reports in our pigeonholes. We get hundreds of them. And some of them are kind of beautiful gold embossed, extremely expensive. You know, they look like they cost about 1,000 rand per copy. So I actually think that this is, when I received this in my pigeonhole a few days ago, I kind of thought this was actually one of the better, more conscious ones that I received. That said, I think, you know, some better font might do the trick. Then just to come back to the runners, to say that I've also, the SARS investigators have been in touch with me, and I have given them an affidavit, and you know, they're conducting an investigation from their side. So I hope from both of your sides you'll be able to pinpoint exactly where this internal corruption is happening and really deal with it very, very firmly. Thanks.
Right. It looked like everyone else was satisfied that their questions had been raised. You know, if anything comes up, you think of it, please refer it to the Portfolio Committee Secretary, and we'll refer it to SIPCO for a written response. Yes, Commissioner.
We haven't dismissed any employees for irregular expenditure. I think when we deal with irregular expenditure, we need to understand that irregular isn't necessarily wasteful. So what may happen is you, irregular could be you, there was one supplier, even though you might have gone through a process, or there was a license that had expired and it, the purchase order wasn't issued in time or the approval wasn't issued in time. So a lot of it is we haven't had any wasteful expenditure in the organization or fruitless. So I think in that sense, I wouldn't necessarily dismiss an employee for irregular expenditure, although if there's a pattern, it is about incremental action. And so we started, there have never been any consequences in the ICT area for irregular expenditure, and we have now started that process, and we started it at the top. So it filters down. So, on the issue of runners, I can just say that, you know, we've actually gone, we will need, obviously, an affidavit, but we've actually traced our transaction in the organization. And one of the things that we didn't mention earlier is the benefit of being paperless in back office is that a lot of these opportunities for irregular transactions are actually paper-based transactions. So we can pick up if it's an irregular transaction in the back office because it will be a paper-based transaction. There's no way that you can get an approval within 3 hours electronically unless everybody else does it too. So we can, so that has actually assisted us in dealing with the potential for fraud.
Thank you very much. And do we have the CFO, Ms. Kumar, on here?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Yeah, I just thought we should have from a departmental perspective on the Auditor General's report. What the minister has done, listened to all the institutions and asked them to submit a plan on how they're going to rectify all the findings, and it has to go through the audit committee. We require a quarterly update or status report on the rectification plans. What we also do is we have a quarterly chief financial officers forum where do we discuss the issues, and on a bi-monthly basis, every 2 months, we meet each chief financial officer individually to understand some of the issues, some of the challenges they have in organizations, so we can address that with the head of those organizations.
No, as I say, I actually do think that CIPCO itself, especially when one recalls CIPRO, is doing well. It's certainly making remarkable progress. But nevertheless, it's just that, I suppose, had previous people been aware what the final issues that would vary CIPRO were, they would have, of course, followed them up. And we wouldn't like to see there's even a seed sown in that particular regard. But for the most part, your progress has been phenomenal, and certainly the cost, your fees, etc. But the point also made by the Honourable Malodzi is that while you know, we know that we want to compare favourably with the first world in terms of communication, and that is the future, nevertheless, in here, in our country, we're working with, you know, a system in rural areas that does not lend itself currently to the internet, and I think we're all aware of that when we travel. Certainly on my travels, just in KZN, in the valleys, and in Limpopo, I realized I couldn't even make a call, and that kind of thing. So I'm sure and I hope that those challenges are going to be addressed during the course of the current financial year. But other than that, I would like to thank you, Commissioner, for bringing your team here. And I'd also like to thank the DDI, Mr. Korto. I know we were already informed by the DDG that she would not be able to make it, and I think you stood in for her very competently. Thank you very much. Mr. Korto, yes, the hands. Thank you, the institutional management there. But all of you and Ms. Mami Lahari, thank you very much. I'm sure you're learning very fast there. Mr. Kumaran Naidu, thank you. Now we're going to have a short tea break. There are some urgent issues that we do need to address, and we'll be back, the sooner we start, give us 5 minutes. Thanks.